Now, on UK Health Radio, treat yourself to an upgrade. Pack away your low self-esteem. Leave behind that empty feeling. Stow your fears and doubts in the overhead locker. And go from stress to authentic success with Danielle Sachs.
Beautiful you, welcome and thank you for listening in again to another week, another show, From Stress to Authentic Success. And I do believe that this week I am actually really, really excited because we are going to talk about a subject that is so dear to my heart. And I can really say that from my heart to yours, that this show might shift something within you, because the topic of this show is all about self-love. Now, self-love has been in my world a concept that I talked about already in like 2 decades ago, self-care and self-love. And in that moment, people were thinking by themselves, oh, self-love, you know, don't exaggerate, you know, self-care, isn't that selfish? All these things. And when you look at today, self-love and self-care are the foundations for having a meaningful, fulfilling life, for experiencing that authentic success. So I'm talking today to Tasha Bailey. She is a qualified psychotherapist. She could actually be my daughter. She's a young person, a spokesperson for the UK Council of Psychotherapy. And she's an author from London. She wrote a beautiful book. I really like the title. The title says Real Talk. So let's have that real talk with Tasha Bailey, which is lessons from therapy about healing and self-love. So it's her experience after helping so many youngsters on how she sees self-love and healing. And so I'm really curious to talk to her about that. And each and every one of us, you in particular, me in particular, we both need that self-love. I have done lots and lots of self-development, of self-growth, of self-leadership. And to me, that self-love and self-care is truly the foundation of so many other concepts in our lives. So I'm really looking forward to talk to Tasha Bailey and see what she has to say about one of the most difficult subjects, certainly for highly sensitive people, certainly for people who have grown up with the thought that self-love and self-care is egoistic, is like self-centered. And it is not. I know from experience after 20, 30 years of helping people that it is not. So I can't wait to have this beautiful conversation with Tasha Bailey on a subject that we all can learn more about, that we all can practice daily. Even if we're strong already in it, we still can always learn something more, some tips, some strategies. So I really look forward to this conversation just after this little break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. And as I said in the intro, I am talking today to this beautiful, wonderful woman that is getting married soon. And I'm talking to Tasha Bailey. Welcome, Tasha.
Thank you.
So exciting. I mean, I believe you are in a period of your life where lots of things are happening. Now, can you tell me maybe a little bit about the first part of your life where you have maybe gone through a lot of stress or had a story in your life which makes you actually the person that you are today? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Absolutely. So I'm a therapist and I'm probably one of the younger generational therapist, and that's because I knew I wanted to be a therapist from a very young age, from the age of 15.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's because I grew up with mental health in my household. So I grew up seeing schizophrenia and no one really explaining to me what schizophrenia was and how it would impact us as a family and what does it mean. And so I had all these questions and obviously saw quite a lot of difficult things. But those questions and those feelings kind of stayed with me until I realized actually I really want to work in mental health so that I can make sense of the questions, but also help other people make sense of mental health and have that conversation. So it's kind of, you know, my family life, seeing mental health kind of.
Who was the person who had the schizophrenia in your childhood?
It was my oldest brother. So I have a lot of older siblings and my oldest brother has schizophrenia. I think it kind of onset around the time that I was born, actually. So I kind of literally grew up watching the impact.
Can you tell us a little example of what you experienced as a child with an older brother that had that mental health problem?
A really unpredictable household. He didn't necessarily live with us, but he spent a lot of time, you know, kind of coming to get meals and spend time with us. But it was a really unpredictable environment. You didn't know whether he would be in a good, healthy place and a kind of very stable place, or whether it would go into kind of quite a paranoid place, shouting, difficult things happening. Yeah, there's a lot, kind of lots of paranoia that he would have. And that was quite scary for me as a child of like, oh, I don't know what's happening. How do I make sense of this?
How did you cope?
Honestly, I think I just zipped it up. You know, I didn't know. I think I didn't necessarily know that it wasn't normal because I was a child. I didn't have anything to compare it to. So I threw a lot of my energy into school, into, you know, school being my safe place, and threw myself into books. I used to love reading as a child. I'd read like 6 books a week.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think my intellect and like my imagination, I used to make a lot of stories up in my head, and it's probably that sense of dissociation.
Yes.
Helped me to cope as a child.
Did you see your mother or your parents suffer from this as well?
Yeah. So it was my mom that was there. She definitely suffered, but she didn't know what to do with that suffering. My mom and the generations before, and there's a real kind of sense of just suck it up, just get on with things. You know, it's only recently that she told me about her own mental health journey a little bit, but it took a lot for her to get to that place with me. But it's very much like mental health is not important. It's how much you can provide for people. That's important. You know, physical love is really important. And so she would kind of bottle it up herself when she was suffering through all this.
Well, we're talking about 25, 30 years ago. I mean, you know, time has changed so much, hey? Mm-hmm. So how did it bring you then to be that therapist and be the expert in, I believe, anxiety, self-love, trauma, childhood wounds? Tell us a little bit about that.
So it's a funny story. So I love stories, and I love, I used to love watching Nickelodeon. And there was this film on Nickelodeon called Harriet the Spy. It's from like the 90s. And it's this girl who her parents, they work, you know, they work a lot of hours. So she has a nanny throughout her whole life. And then when she's about 11 or 12, her nanny has to leave. And obviously it's like a big grief and bereavement for her. So her parents sent her to a child psychotherapist.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I want to have a child psychotherapist.
Wow.
And then it led into, actually, I want to be a child psychotherapist. I want to help kids have conversations with toys and playful things and, like, you know, be able to speak about their emotions. That's probably what I needed, actually, throughout my childhood, but I didn't get. So my first kind of career dream was to be a child psychotherapist, and I trained as a child psychotherapist.
Yes.
And was like, I'm never working with adults. That's just not my thing. And then I realized I loved working with adults because we all have an inner child that has these stories that need to be
Indeed.
Told. So that's kind of how it led me to doing what I do.
I actually love it because it seems to me that your title of your coming book, Real Talk, has to do with that. Like, let's talk real here. Let's talk about the things that really matter. Is that why you chose that title?
Yeah, I think it's that. And it's also that a lot of the time we need to heal from the things that we're scared to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So let's like find ways to bring it. Let's find ways to like bring it to the surface. Like we might use a bit of banter and humor to bring it up, and then we unpack it a little bit more. Or one thing that I do a lot of my clients is maybe there's a film that they watch, or I have clients who love Harry Potter, for example, and we will use metaphors from Harry Potter to describe how they're feeling.
Yes.
And that's easier for them to get to than us saying it in the normal words. So mm-hmm. finding a way to meet them so that they can authentically meet themselves is what Real Talk is about.
Wow. Talking about authenticity, hey, it's such an important thing to be vulnerable, to be authentic, and to, instead of putting up the mask, isn't it?
Yeah, because that mask is so easy to, you know, we're not born with it, but we learn to have it really fixed on. And especially the more trauma we have, or the more difficulties we have to manifest, like work through, the firmer that mask is on.
Mm-hmm.
And finding safe places where we can be like, actually, I think I can take this mask off for a couple of minutes.
Mm.
Let me just let it slip for a little bit. And then I could put it on if I feel I need to, but let me just let it slip for a little bit and see what that feels like.
Wow. So your book is all about real talk. And I think it says lessons from therapy about healing and self-love. Let's talk a little bit about healing and self-love. Like maybe first part a bit of healing, but I really want to go into the self-love because I don't know if you know, but self-love is also one of my expertises. And I really believe that it's the base of so many things in our lives. If we don't love ourselves, you know, we can't even, I'm not saying we can't love anyone else, but it does make a difference in, and it's about that inner child, isn't it? The healing and the self-love. Just give us a little bit of explanation there.
Yeah, so I would say healing is any, you know, any wounds that we have, and there's some that we'll be aware of and some that we won't be aware of. Really going back to those wounds and looking after them the way that we needed to. So we might have gone through some really difficult experiences where we, you know, we saw the wound and we just had to keep carrying on. You know, like I said about my mom, like just carrying on, you know, and moving on with life and focusing on the practicals of things. But at some point, if we don't heal those wounds, it's going to bite us in the bum and it's going to get in the way of the rest of our journey. So we need to go back, look at that wound and say, how can I look after this right now? How can I look after it in the way that I needed to look after it? And I think that's where then self-love comes in, because when you grow self-love and work on self-love, you're basically, you're learning, how do I be the person that I needed? How do I be the person that I needed to look after me in that moment? How do I be the parent that I needed? How do I be the partner that I needed? You're saying, yes, I can have those things in relationships around me, but actually I can be the source of my own love as well. And that is self-love, yeah.
So let's say that somebody's listening out there and I'm talking to that listener who has been maybe stuck, has been having trauma, wounds, you know, childhood wounds, a little bit like you, who has experienced mental health in their childhood. So many of us have. How would you say, if that person is now sitting with the question, yeah, self-love, it's all good to talk about it, but how do you do that? How do I start loving myself? What would it be, Tasha, that you would say to them?
Yeah, and I would say it's also really important that self-love is not something that is like, it's not black or white. It's not like you have it or you don't have it. It's a spectrum, and you can move across the spectrum depending on where you are in your life. There are times when self-love is quite easy and there's other times when it's quite hard. And I think if a lot of the time, if we don't have if we can't feel self-love, or if it feels particularly hard, it's because it is from childhood and what we haven't internalized, what haven't been able to internalize. So I say that there's two things we need to do. We need to do inner child work and also inner child play. So inner child work is the unpacking. Where does this come from? What are the blocks in the love that I have for myself, and where did that come from? Who taught me those blocks, and how can I reteach myself? And then the inner child play is connecting with your inner child and thinking about what things did he, she, they need back then that I can give myself now. Mm. Like what fun things, joyful things, wonderful things, you know, what things that they loved to do when they were a kid. For me, it was reading and art. For someone else, it might be Lego, for example. But can I connect with that now as an adult, just to show my inner child some love and some play? Play is so powerful. And I know this from like working with children. Play is so powerful in helping us heal and make sense of our stories. So it's really important that we still kind of connect with those, even when we are however old we are now. Mm-hmm. Play is really important.
I love it when you say that, because I remember that one of my strategies when I, after my, you know, I got really very sick and lying flat, and in my recovery, in my process, you know, that I did exactly that. It was the playfulness, like going back on a swing. As a child, I loved, you know, going on the swing, and just, I can even feel it now in my stomach when I tell you about it, because that feeling of freedom and flying and, you know, the playfulness in being busy with swinging is mm-hmm. such a, it has helped me so much to every time go back to that inner child who had fun, mm-hmm. you know, instead of that inner child who was hurt. Mm-hmm. So it's, that is a, thank you for sharing that. Now,
and as I say, it just reminds me as well, because you asked me about how did I cope as a child with the stuff that I was dealing with. And one thing that I did used to do, and probably more when I was about 11, 12, 13, is I used to write songs or poetry.
Yes.
And this, and it was always love songs, really. Mm. It's like always love songs to myself.
Oh,
so
beautiful.
Actually, was my first time of doing self-love was writing love songs to myself.
Mm.
And that is that playfulness, that is that, you know, creativity. And trying to make sense of what it is. What do I need? What, something's happening here. What do I need? And what am I trying to communicate? Let me write in a song.
Yeah, I think it's also about stop to judging yourself and start embracing yourself, your true mm-hmm. self, and see who you really are. What is it that I need, that I love, that I is that what you mean?
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
Mm, great. So anyone who wants to ask you now the question about, okay, Tisha, you are have read written that book, that Real Talk. What can I expect from that book? What is it exactly that you are giving us as tips or strategies, or what is the book about?
So it's full of, I guess, therapeutic wisdom and knowledge. It's got some of my stories, and we talk about things like obviously trauma, grief, sex, body image, inner critic, and unpacking them in ways that feels kind of very accessible and very, you know, reachable, so that you can really relate it to your own life. And it's also full of two things, real talk moments, which are moments for you to pause and think, how does this apply to my life and my story? Mm. And then also, I think it's a real talk exercise, it's what we call it. And it's kind of a creative exercise that will help you to implement it somehow in your life.
Mm.
So it might be drawing something, or it might be giving you some tools so you can kind of create boundaries or whatever it is you need to do. But there's lots of like both text, but also things to help you do and implement and integrate.
So also a practical kind of book.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah.
Nice. And so how was the process of writing it for you?
Oh,
because I've
gosh.
Been through it, and it's like having a baby, isn't it?
It is. And it's funny you say that, because they asked me, how long do you need to write the book? And I said 9 months.
Yeah.
So, and I think I definitely underestimated how long it would take.
Mm.
But it was, oh gosh, it was hard work. It was really hard work. talking about inner critics, my inner critic was very loud.
Mm-hmm.
There was lots of days of like lying on my sofa, just saying, I cannot do this. Mm-hmm. There's no way this is possible. And then there were other days where just like, oh my God, I'm loving this. This is amazing. So it was a real kind of love hate journey. It's very revealing to write a book, and especially when you're writing bits of your own story and you're known it's going to be out in the world and you can't, you know, you can't bring it back out, bring it back. It's going to be out there and you can't do anything about it. So it was very revealing in that sense.
It's being vulnerable, hey? But isn't vulnerability a part of self-love?
It is. Yeah. Mm. Doesn't mean that I love it. You know, sometimes vulnerability is always hard. And there's sometimes when you're having to almost fight yourself to be like, no, I need to be more vulnerable. Stay with it. So yeah, it was incredibly vulnerable and quite exposing, actually.
Is there a story you want to share with me and anyone listening now about your life that you think can be inspiring for anyone listening today? Because it's in the book anyway, so people mm-hmm. are going to read it anyway. So if there's one, I love it when people share a vulnerable story.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one that can come up, but I would say that the one story that I talk about is thinking about imposter syndrome and the inner critic, and I felt it a lot whilst training as a therapist. Probably the most in my life I felt it then, and I think I reflect in the book that some of it was because I was the youngest person in my cohort. And so a lot of the time I doubted myself, and actually even when I did my interview with my course, you know, to apply for the course, they said to me, you're very young, are you sure this is right for you, and what do you think you could bring at the age that you are? I think I was like 24 at the time, and I think that knocked my confidence straight away, and I carried that throughout my 5 years of training of like, I'm very young, what can I even bring to this field? And it kind of would come up because I was working with children, it would come up when I was working with their parents, and I'd be thinking, oh my God, they're going to be looking at me thinking, what can you bring to this child? What can you bring to this? So I had this kind of constant question of my confidence over and over.
Yeah, it's a limiting truth about yourself. That is, the question is that the truth, that you are too young?
Exactly.
Nobody knows what you've lived through. And, you know, if you've had 20 years of experience with mental health, then you're definitely not too young to do this kind of, you see, so it's often like that. So isn't it, we have so many limiting beliefs about ourselves and limiting truths that we have been installed at a young age. Hey, Tasha, I mean, isn't that one of the problems?
Absolutely. Cause it stops us from actually, you know, being authentic. You know, it wasn't until I started working with, young adults from age 18 to 25
mm-hmm.
who were actually quite close to my age group at the time. I think I was like 30. And actually the work was so amazing. It was so incredible. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter that I was only five years older than them. Actually, we did the most, that's where Real Talk was born, actually, if anything, because we would have to use, you know, that age group. It's very existential. It's very like there's so much coming up, but also not necessarily the knowing how to verbalize it. So it's lots of poetry work and lots of bringing song lyrics and talking about Harry Potter, like all the things that I think
creativity, artwork.
Exactly. There's so much of that. And it just felt, I felt so in my element. I didn't question, I don't have nothing to bring here. I was like, actually, I'm creating a space for somebody to bring what they can bring. It's not even necessarily about, I mean, I'm bringing safety. That's what I can bring. That's what I should be bringing. And that's what's important. So I think, you know, it's facing the fears, because I was absolutely terrified of that age group because of the whole reason of my age, and actually realizing that they taught me so much about what I can bring and what I can show.
So how is your own journey of self-love going? Because in this society, ever-changing, so demanding, so critical, so how is your own journey of self-love going?
It's going. It's going. I feel like self-love journey is almost like a board game. Mm-hmm. And you have all these different challenges along the way. So for example, my current challenge is the wedding industry. And the wedding industry is very, it's very fat phobic. I'm a plus size woman. It's very fat phobic. It's very, brides should look a certain way and you should be doing this for people at your wedding and this. And it's all about the perfect day. And so it can make my inner critic be like, oh my gosh, I've got so much to do to fulfill what a perfect wedding should be or what a perfect bride should look like. So that's a challenge. But at the same time, my self-love is able to push through a lot of that. There'll be times when I'm going to stumble, absolutely. Mm. But the self-love that I've been building has been like, oh, I'm a bride and I look amazing in my bloody dress, the size that I am. I don't need to look any other way. Mm. Perfect is not needed. I just need to have fun and joy on my wedding day. So I think, you know, my self-love journey has been tested, but you know, I think it's going with the motions and the grooves and the challenges.
Mm. Oh, beautiful. And so what have you done to heal your own traumas and childhood wounds? Because we talked about it in the beginning. So how did you have a therapist? What kind of therapy did you do for yourself?
Yeah. So when I did my training, I had a therapist for 5 years. And I stayed with her for the whole 5 years, and she was amazing. My criteria for looking for a therapist was I want someone with really kind eyes, and that's all I wanted. And I found someone with really kind eyes and a
what
kind
does
presence.
It mean to you, kind eyes? If that's what you wanted, what does it mean to you to have kind eyes?
I think it's something about someone who's looking back at me without judgment, without criticism, who just wants me to be who I am authentically without me needing to be something for them. Great. That's what kind eyes meant for me. And that's exactly who I received. And I would say we were together for 5 years, and that final year, the fifth year, was probably the most powerful because we knew we were ending in a year's time. And so all of the difficult feelings that I was like, oh, I can't bring anger to her. All of those feelings came up. I was so angry. And it was so safe and healing to be able to bring that to her and know she could receive it and hold it.
What was your anger about?
My anger was about us ending and that, you know, something so good was coming to an end. And I think for me, that probably came back from my life story of like people that had left or abandoned me or died and these kind of things. All of that came up in that final year.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
And when you look back at it, how would you describe that journey?
So
is it a journey of self-love, of healing, of how would you describe the journey?
So one way that me and my therapist described it towards the end was that when I first started, I would wear a lot of like dark colors. I was quite very plain in how I dressed, and a lot of it was because I was going to work straight after, but I was very plain. And then I think in the final year, I'd wear like, you can see it now, I'm wearing like these colorful headbands. I would wear lots of color and headbands, and like, I just look more authentically colourful, more colourful, more bright. And that was literally the journey of like going from being quite closed in, zipped up, and actually like allow myself to bloom, I think is the word, like allow myself to be seen. Being seen was as scary as it was when I first started.
Beautiful. And what would be a first step that you would advise anyone who wants to do this journey? What would be a first step?
Doing the journey of therapy or of self-love? Okay.
I think it's a little bit the same. In your real talk world, it's a little bit the same, the healing and the self-love, but you can choose.
I would say, and I think this relates to both, It's finding places where your vulnerability can land. So whether that's with a therapist that you're like, you meet them for the first time, you say, actually, I can imagine myself feeling safe with this person. Or if it's certain friendships or people in your life that you feel like, I think I can open up a little bit more of this person. That's another thing that happened for me, was that as I finished my training, my friendship groups had changed. I had more therapists in my life, obviously, but also the friendships that I had beforehand that weren't as deep had suddenly become quite deep because we could go to a different place. And so finding friendships that understood the authentic version of me rather than the masked version of me, that was really important. You might have loads of friends, but they might not be able to tolerate or to accept who you really are. And those are not your people.
Beautiful, hey? So I'm almost without words when I hear you say that, because I think it's absolutely beautiful when you talk also about, you know, the darkness and the being in that space. And there are so many people in that space right now, in that dark space, and then going to bloom and going to expand and going into joy and into colors. That's how you describe it. I really like that. Is there an example that you can give about, you don't have to, of course, use their names, but an example story that you can say about someone that you have been the therapist of that did a beautiful journey like that, like one of those youngsters?
Yeah, gosh, let me think of some. Oh, okay, yeah, I've got someone straight away. I had someone who, when we first started having therapy sessions, I asked them for their pronouns. It's just something that I started to ask at the time. And they found it really, they were like, what? Why are you asking me that? And so I just think it's important. And they said, well, it's really weird that you asked me that, because I'm born a girl, but actually I've been feeling like actually that's not quite right. So can we use their pronouns? And the therapy space became a space for them to explore their gender identity, who they are, who they felt, what felt comfortable within their body. And they literally kind of, you know, went through a transition of looking different, being different. Their name changed, their pronouns changed. And it was hard. It was really, really hard, because then, you know, they'd come out to their family and that was a whole different reaction. But there was also these moments of absolute joy that how I see my body and how I feel are connecting together.
Yes.
There's this kind of, everything is coming together. And that was a really beautiful journey to be a part of. Not to say that it wasn't hard after that, but it's almost like they found themselves.
And it's often about, it doesn't have to be, you know, a different gender. Or for me, it's often about the disconnection between who we pretend to be and who we actually really are. And I mean, and in my generation, I think people really, a lot of people lived like that. And these days we have to admit that, you know, there's so much more space for openness and for vulnerability and for actually authentic living. You know, that's why my show is called From Stress to Authentic Success, because if you come into alignment with who you are, I mean, Tasha, and you become more and more authentic and true to yourself, like you say, you allow yourself to be yourself, then success follows naturally, whatever that success is for you. So can you tell me a little bit of a statement maybe, or a quote that you lived by all those years that for you was a really important text or poem or statement? Is there anything that you live by that you could advise anyone to look into?
Yeah, there's two poems that come to mind. One of them is, it's a poem that I used to love actually as a teenager. It's by Tupac Shakur, and it's called The Rose That Grew From Concrete. It's a short poem, and it just basically, I can't remember it word for word, but it basically talks about the story of a rose that grew from concrete that learned to walk without having feet and to breathe its own air. Yeah, to breathe its own air.
Wow.
And that has always stayed with me. You know, even when I did my dissertation, I put that poem in as the
Yes.
center, and it's just always stayed with me. And then the other one is, I think it's more of a self-love, confidence thing, and particularly for women, is Phenomenal Woman by Maya Angelou.
Oh, yes.
And it's just a really fun poem, and it's kind of very much like allowing yourself to embrace your sassiness and your confidence, and just, you know, be with your body and enjoy your body. It's very much kind of that kind of poem.
Beautiful. Maya Angelou is such, I mean, she was such a wise woman for her age. And I mean, I love all her quotes and her work and her, you can fill a day just by
Yeah.
listening to her. And I mean, she's just such a wonderful, and I've actually met her only, not met her, but I got to know her actually almost too late. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
You would have loved to have known her earlier because she's got such wisdom. So thank you for that. Is there anything you want to talk about just for a few, two last minutes, three last minutes that you want to talk about in this show that you want to share with others?
I was just thinking about the power of music. And I know we spoke about play, and some people might be listening to what we talked about play and thinking, oh my God, that sounds really scary, or really, how do I even engage with that? But music is part of play. And if you want to connect with your inner child, if you want to play with your inner child, make them a playlist of your favorite songs or poems or just things that will make your inner child feel happy. Whether that's Backstreet Boys or whatever it is, Spice Girls, you know, allow yourself to kind of create a playlist. Yeah.
What was your favorite music when you were younger?
I did really adore Spice Girls. I really loved them.
Strange, hey? Are we all, in a way, it's a double feeling. Like, in a way, you think, these girls. But on the other way, I hear it so many times that Spice Girls songs are still today making us feel like, you want to dance and you go into that playful mode, hey?
Exactly. And
Oh, nice.
there's also a song, I don't know what it's called, but it's from the film Matilda. And it's probably like a 70s or 60s song, and it's just very like it's a lot in like children's films, like in the background when there's a fun moment, it's always this song. And yeah, I can't remember what it's called, but
No, that's
it's
okay.
amazing.
Oh, great. So
What's your song actually?
my song, I have actually danced on Donna Summer, and there's all the
Yeah.
my in my room the music was always loud, and I had these vinyl records, and I had a little cassettophone, like from the time, and I played it again and again, and I was dancing and putting it so loud. So Diana Ross, Donna Summer, all these classics.
Amazing disco.
That's how I grew up, and yeah, it's amazing how it stays with you, isn't it? I mean, all that you loved as a child often stays with you for so long. So, oh, thank you, Tasha. It was such a pleasure. Is there one last quote or one last word that you want to share?
There's a dedication in my book, the front page, and it says something like, there might be gold at your feet, but only if you're willing to dig for it.
Wow. There might be gold at your feet, but only if you want to
Oh,
dig for
willing
it.
to, yeah.
Wow. That's a great one, hey? So you've been digging a lot, hey?
Digging, yeah.
I want to wish you good luck with your book. I mean, people can look it up on our website. I'm sure it's all in there. And I believe they can pre-order it already. Starting, and it's coming out in September, is it?
September 28th of September.
Okay. Good luck with that, and thank you so much for being here. We really
Thank
enjoyed
you.
this. Thank
Oh, thank
you.
you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
for listening in again. And as I promised to you, we had a real talk with Tasha Bailey about self-love, about how we need to grow our self-love, that inner child within us needs to be loved, because there's a lot of wounds, childhood wounds, trauma, etc., that we all have experienced, that you have experienced. And so one of the ways to grow that self-love is to really look what that inner child needs, to go and look into the work that we need to do to get rid of all the limiting beliefs, the blocks, that belief system that is limiting us in being exactly who we are and loving ourselves exactly for who we are, with a lot of vulnerability, with a lot of mildness and all these things. And so she was also adding a second part, that it's not just about taking away the blocks and the limiting beliefs, but it's also about play. And I really love that. It is about connecting with that inner child instead of staying in our head and worrying and having all these limiting truths about ourselves that create our reality. We need to go and connect with that inner child, with ourselves, with our authentic selves, and play. So she gave us a little advice on, if you want to go for a therapist or for someone who can guide you in this beautiful journey of self-love, she says that it is so important to get someone with kind eyes. I really love that expression, because I too believe that it is so, so essential for every single one of us, you in particular, to have an environment that is not judgmental of you. I believe I've grown up with judgment in my life, and I believe it is one of the most destructive, depleting things. It is the judgment, because when we are judged all the time, whether it's in the home, whether it's in school, wherever we are, whether it's in our social life, and we are judged like we are today on social media, it is so easy today to judge others. We truly need someone with kind eyes, with mildness, with acceptance. And that is how you go from darkness into be seen exactly as you are, being authentic. And so you need to find those places, those people, that supportive network around you, even if it's just one person, where you can land, where you feel safe, where you can take off your mask and you can be just as authentic as you are. It is such a challenge in society to be, and that's what I'm here for. That is my mission, my purpose. Go to my website and look into it. Look into the testimonials. Look on how, to me, it is so important to get out of this vicious cycle, to get out of that playing modus of playing someone you are not, and taking off the mask and really go and connect from your head to your heart and go there, find that true self. And the more you are in alignment with that true self, and Tasha really gave us a few beautiful things, a beautiful poem that you can go and listen to. There's a few things in that conversation that really can motivate you to really go dig deeper into yourself and go into awareness of who you are. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Just permit yourself, you know, admit to yourself some mistakes, maybe. I mean, you know, some things that you regret in your life, that's fine. But go into acceptance in the now, and make a shift so you can move forward out of self-love, out of mildness for yourself. And I really liked the quote with which she ended our conversation. And I have to admit, for a young person, Tasha really knows what she's talking about. And the quote said, "There might be gold at your feet, but only if you are willing to dig for it. Isn't that a beautiful summary of if you want to start loving yourself, if you want to change your life, better your life, if you want to be that better version of yourself, it is there. It is at your feet. You are already a diamond, but it's up to you if you are willing to dig for it and to look for it and to be aware of it and start developing, like really go and learn and unlearn all these limiting beliefs and start learning how you can love yourself, how you can take care of yourself. I think that this was such a beautiful conversation. And if there's anything you need to know more of on how to start loving yourself, don't hesitate to contact me at danielasachs.com or go to my website or ask me just a question. Ask me anything you want that you want to talk about, and we can block in my agenda just a little moment to really help you shift into that transformation and do that first, next, best step. I will leave you for this week. I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye for now.
From Stress to Authentic Success was presented by Danielle Sachs. Join Danielle at the same time next week here on UK Health Radio. And meanwhile, for more on how to thrive in business and everyday life by being true to yourself, go to danielsachs.com.